I will stand by the smoky cookie till the day I die. Welcome to our second season of Spirited Discussions. I'm Lachlan Watt, and I have over 10 years' experience in both the spirits and bar industries, while also having an insatiable thirst for understanding the booze that we drink. Through this series, we will dive deeper into the topics that we have grazed in season one and dive into some other historical tidbits that have guided our drinking habits. Join me through our second season, and well, let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Spirited Discussions. Today, I am joined by Priscilla and Paul, and we are going to be talking about non-alcoholic beverages because the world is just obsessed with them right now, right? So, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Hello.
I'm meant to be the awkward one.
You've got three awkward people in the room with you now, Lachlan.
So. Oh, including Grayson, that's four. Well, I guess we'll start off like we do every episode, but would you like to share your history in this industry with us?
Sure, I'll go first. So I'm much older than I would care to admit these days, but I've been in hospitality or bartending since I was 18. Mm-hmm. Started off in pubs, nightclubs in the UK, lived in Essex, so just outside of London. And I guess never really thought that hospitality was going to be a career path for me, which I think is something that a lot of people fall into the industry do. But I've worked throughout like my university life and then eventually transitioned to say that, you know, I really love this industry. It's something that I'm interested in. Got the cocktail bug, moved to London. I was lucky enough to work with a group that was then called the Match Group or the Rushmore Group.
Yeah.
So owned Milk and Honey, The Player, East Room, Match, and sort of trained with an amazing bunch of bartenders there. Then around 2008, moved to Melbourne. Match was opening a venue here, and it sort of felt like an amazing opportunity to do working holiday visa,
get out of
come
London,
to Australia, see some beautiful Melbourne weather, which was a huge improvement on London. And obviously, we were just going through GFC at the time, so it was, you know, a great opportunity to sort of like escape and, you know, no real ideas of staying here, but it was pretty good. So yeah, here I still am. But met this lovely young lady next to me.
Competitions, mind you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you were both doing together, like world class and all of that.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, we knew each other sort of from the industry from like as soon as I was in Melbourne, really, I guess. I was, you know, who's this amazing bartender at
at
Golden Monkey. I was again lucky enough to work with people at Seamstress and then eventually moved to Sydney with Priscilla as well. I was GM at Bulletin Place for some time. We made the move to Singapore. Which is a huge sort of massive life decision. Part of the opening team at, we both were part of the opening team at Raffles Hotel.
Yep.
And then a horrible thing called COVID happened.
It's brought you all the way back here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But we, you know, silver linings, opened a company called The Flowing Bowl, which we still have now, brought back with us to Melbourne. And Priscilla runs full time, but I'm also a production development manager at the Everly Bottling Co.
Right, awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Us amazing.
Up to date.
I love it.
It's a long history. Sorry, I'm very old.
Oh, no.
Don't be sorry.
This is great. That's very well lived. and yourself, Priscilla?
Well, he's told most of the long story. Half of it's told already. I actually have spent most of my working career in Australia, mostly Melbourne, then Sydney, back to Melbourne, then Sydney again, and then Singapore. In terms of cocktail bartending, I started out at a place called 1806.
Yeah.
Eventually,
with Seb Rayburn. Who we've had as a guest for another episode.
Oh, so. God, he's amazing.
Yeah.
That mind, you could spend a lifetime unpicking it. But yeah, so taught me the foundations to a great cocktail and the history of it, fell in love with the romance of, you know, the whole history, went on to work at Golden Monkey with the beautiful Joey Tai.
Yeah, my mentor in this industry.
Yeah, and then at the same time, took a big leap of faith and became a part owner in a place called Berlin Bar, which still stands today. I don't know how. in Chinatown, in a cute little spot. I'm no longer, obviously, or I'm part owner of that anymore. But yeah, I've gone on to do lots of different things in the beverage world. I've been a brand ambassador. I've been a sales rep. I've sold whiskey, cognac. I've done events. And I don't know. I what else is there to explore? Probably winemaking and maybe whiskey making.
Yeah, the production side.
Yeah, the production side of things. That's one thing we haven't done yet, which hopefully will be in the pipeline in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. well, I guess we better get you to hassle me on my 60-second history.
Bravo. I can't wait.
This is such an interesting one with no alcohol drinks, because while it's had this massive resurgence over what the last, I'd say, 5 or 6 years, it's been really coming to a head with the wellness movement.
Yeah, feels like that. I mean, certainly when we were living in Sydney and before we moved to Singapore, we were aware of products, like I'm assuming we're going to talk about, coming into the market. And maybe we were a bit, you know, maybe slightly disparaging of them at the time.
Yeah.
I think sort of like, or didn't think they were necessary 100%. But it's something that's not gone away, and it's just grown and grown and grown.
And the production methods and everything have gotten so much better, and it's becoming, the quality is becoming so much higher now as well. So it's really interesting to see that movement, that development. So, but let's go through this history. Okay. I spent quite a lot of time researching to find, to very little avail, but
we've got a timer ready for you.
It's not like there's been alcoholic drinks forever, but there's definitely been non-alcoholic drinks forever.
That is true.
So let's dive in. So I'll get you to time me 60 seconds.
Ready?
Hassle me.
Set.
Okay.
And go.
All right. Non-alcoholic beverages have existed for thousands and thousands of years. And even with alcohol existing and being favored by some people at the time, there's always been people who don't enjoy drinking or the effects of alcohol. In medieval Europe, we see beverages like ginger beer becoming popular. And in the 19th century, we have the temperance movement really building up momentum, which created a growing want for non-alcoholic drinks. So soda started to become popular, like sarsaparilla and root beer. This really comes to a head with prohibition in the United States. And big soda companies really came into stride with the soda fountain. People also started to love sweetened iced teas. In recent times, with the growing wellness industry and people trying to care for themselves a bit more, there has been a massive growth in non-alcoholic alternative market, with non-alcoholic beer, gin, wine becoming increasingly popular.
Well done.
Smashed it.
Under time as well. Well,
51 seconds.
I'm getting better at this, Fuller.
You are indeed. Yeah. You are indeed.
All right. Well, we best start off with what led you to work in the no alcohol industry, or look at these drinks, I guess, more.
Oh.
More.
Well, I think, I guess, since ever we've worked in bars, there's always been place for non-alcoholic drinks.
Yeah, yeah.
That's absolutely true. Like, and there was always, even when I was, you know, bartending back in the dark old days of the early 2000s, I mean, I started off, there was still powdered sweet and sour mix that I was using in the first bars.
I am old,
yeah. we'll move on from that, though. But, like, but even then, like, we would definitely have call for non-alcoholic cocktails, mocktails, whatever we would call them. But I don't think there was certainly any space for us. We were thinking about putting drink on a menu that was non-alcoholic.
Yeah.
That was not something that was done. It's just sort of, oh, yeah, I can make you a non-alcoholic strawberry daiquiri. It's just going to be apple juice and strawberries blended together with ice, whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of, like, stayed that way for a long time. It was just sort of juice, syrups, soda,
really sweet
maybe.
Drinks.
Yeah, totally.
Sadly so, because I'm actually allergic to alcohol.
Yeah.
And my go-to drink, if I couldn't be asked ordering a cocktail, would always be a ginger beer with bitters, or, you know, a soft drink with bitters of some sort, just so it wouldn't be full of sugar.
Yeah.
Very uninspiring, really.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, the great Australian lemon lime and bitters is like a revelation to someone coming from the UK. The use of, like, really heavy use of bitters in a sort of citrusy drink.
But
amazing.
Also adding that fresh lime to it as well just kind of brings that sweetness right back down.
Yeah. And such a different, like much more adult experience rather than, you know, just pineapple and orange topped with soda.
Yeah. Or just, you know, just a bunch of sugar syrups together with soda and then, you know, there you go. Have fun.
What were your thoughts when Seedlip came into the country?
Seedlip specifically, I thought it was a great idea to have these non-alcoholic spirits, but with, well, just with non-alcoholic drinks in general, up until very recently, I always found them either too sweet or they just didn't carry any weight or, you know.
Didn't have that texture.
The texture, the flavors were kind of there, but there was just no real weight or character to it.
Yeah.
And I found over the last 3 years specifically, non-alcoholic drinks have really expanded to the fact that we've got these drinks that aren't just sweet, but they still have texture, they still have character, they still, you know.
Yeah. I think we're at a point now where if you don't have a great non-alcoholic offering on your menu and it actually holds like a fairly substantial space in your menu, well, I mean, you're
missing out.
Missing out, absolutely.
Exactly. I think I mentioned briefly before we started recording this episode, I put a bit of research in about 3 years ago when my boss was pregnant and she was complaining about going out and not being able to find non-alcoholic drinks that weren't just full of sugar or just had no character to them whatsoever.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult to try and tread that line, especially when you're making cocktails and stuff like that for people who aren't drinking.
Yeah, still massively challenging, I think, like even now, like with the explosion in products available to us that are hugely improved, but it's still really difficult to kind of make a beautifully structured drink.
Yeah.
Put it this way, when I was in Sydney recently, I went to one of the top 50 bars in the world. I asked for a non-alcoholic cocktail and they asked me if passion fruit would be all right. And I was like, oh, of course, I love passion fruit. Who doesn't love passion fruit, right?
It's fantastic. Yeah.
And the drink came and it was just sour and passion fruit. And I feel quite, I mean, I get it. It's a busy bar. You know, you've got a ton of other drinks to make. But I am still paying about $20 for this drink.
Yeah.
So I found it a bit disappointing given that these guys were, you know, well known for their creativity as well and hospitality. So when you think about it, if you truly are all encompassing of hospitality, why wouldn't you give the time to be creative about creating a complex drink for someone who can't consume alcohol?
It is one of those things that I guess kind of still does get kind of left to the side for bars. And yeah, like you said, it's about hospitality, caring for every single person that comes through that door and trying to give them the experience that you give everyone else, you know, no matter what walk of life or whatever they're looking for. If you have the ability to do so, do it.
Yeah. Well, we can now, which is awesome because there are actually a huge range of available products in the market that, you know, bartenders can play with and people at home can play with as well. They're not, you know, it's not hard to find them these days.
No. And even so, there's also pre-packaged things already that you can pick up as a bartender where you don't have to be think on your feet in that moment. You can provide like what we're drinking here, this from Non, which is what a fantastic no alcohol, they call it a wine alternative. You know?
The best.
Yeah. This one here, number 7, sour cherries, cold brew coffee, garam masala, allspice, nutmeg, pink peppercorn, Murray River salt and verjus.
Oh, so
this
good.
I think Priscilla and I can both say this is our favorite of the non-range.
Yeah, like, it's fantastic.
Yeah, these guys are really good.
Yeah, I completely forgot I had this. I was so happy when I found it this morning.
So glad you did. Yeah. I love it because I can tell you a story about this. The first time we experienced it was when we were having lunch at 10 Minutes by Tractor.
Yep.
A few years ago. And
fantastic winery as well.
Yes.
Amazing.
Of course, great food. Lindsay and I go down there every now and then.
Well, when we can afford it. But we had this phenomenal dark dish that came out with a cherry glaze. And the sommelier came over and offered Paul a glass of wine. She knew that I couldn't drink as well. So she gave this as an alternative suggestion. And best pairing ever. It just, it works so well with food.
It would have been beautiful. Yeah,
it was perfect. So yeah, very impressed. Very happy that we came across that. Loyal fans now.
Yeah. Non are fantastic. They do incredible things. Yeah. But we've been talking about non-alcoholic cocktails. Is there any tips I think we can give people to try and create these balanced and nuanced and exciting cocktails with nowadays with all the products that are available to us? Or
so I think it's still not easy. And I think that sort of like coming from kind of like a bartender who, like myself, is, I think of drinks in a sort of very classic structure.
Mm-hmm.
So that means I'll approach certain things in a similar way.
Like yeah.
The sweet, sour, plus strong, like with maybe a lengthener on top.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really approach non-alcs in exactly that way because there's just certain things yeah. that like you're not going to be able to have. You can certainly have sweet and sour, but it's very difficult if you make something that is as sweet
mm-hmm.
as you would an alcoholic drink because you don't have the dryness that you get from the alcohol. So yeah. you need to sort of like, I think, start off with something that has less sugar generally to start off with or a softer sugar, something maybe that's a bit more natural like an agave or a maple
or a honey or something.
Yeah, yeah, a natural sugar that's sort of not quite as heavy or viscous on the palate, but also sort of build in some natural acidities like mm-hmm. things like ingredients that have sweet and sour built in. So grape based products are great.
Like verjuice is a great example.
Verjuice, grape concentrate,
mm-hmm.
Even like, but also I think use the nuances that you can find in the other non-alc component products that, again, there's huge amount of them out there that yeah. are amazing. You've got like the Liars range, you've got Seedlip. We've got a few others that we've brought with us today, sort of like a non-alcoholic vermouth by a company called Palermo.
Yep.
And you can sort of build a level of complexity through those products. I still kind of, you know, set in my ways, I like to stick to a fairly structured profile.
Yeah.
But trying to build those layers of complexity.
I think herb, bitterness, spices, yeah, teas. Herb, spices, teas,
yeah.
bitterness is always very helpful in giving you that element of complexity that just pushes everything, all the flavors together and forward.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, be mindful of the fact that not every bitters available in the market is alcohol free.
No, it's
but
not.
But there are some which, you know, would use glycerine, for example, as a form of to extract.
Like Fee Brothers is a great example.
Some of them
that.
Yeah. are, yeah.
Otherwise sort of like bitter either syrups like Monin make a bitter which is really good mm-hmm. Giffard make a like a herbal bitter
teas
style
are great to
syrup
work
which
with.
Is great
yeah teas yeah. I've also yeah just things like spices and mm-hmm. and herbs or even look at certain fruits and try and use like the skins or stuff like that
yeah.
to try and create you know astringency or
yeah
I think as long as it's not too aggressive like often yeah. you'll see in sort of like non-alcoholic gins that they'll use maybe pepperberry
mm-hmm.
to add kind of like a prickle on the tongue instead of texture, but it can come across as being quite aggressive sometimes.
Well, pepperberry is a very aggressive ingredient as well.
Yeah. So I mean, like I think used very sparingly, it can be great, but like you've got to be like with a lot of Australian botanicals, you've got to less is more kind of
yeah
eye to that.
It is something that is really, really potent and powerful. It's just the Australian yeah. botanical flavor, you know.
Isn't it just?
Yeah. Yeah. It can be really challenging for some people. But also, there are certain processes that we understand from working in bars, from our practical knowledge, you know, through osmosis or, you know, to create different things that would be difficult to replicate at home, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We have the equipment. We have the practical know-how. But there are so many big brands are coming out with their no alcohol gins now.
That's true. Yeah.
And I think, I think sort of like from the experience I have at Everly Bottling, like I would say that it's definitely much more difficult to make great non-alcoholic mm-hmm. drinks at home in comparison to like a great alcoholic version of that.
Yeah. yeah.
What are we missing?
It's just that element of texture, I think, is really, really hard to replicate. And if you're sort of like using large scale ingredients,
mm-hmm.
you can kind of bypass that with a few technical tricks or mm-hmm. like things that you maybe can use to enhance a flavor. But you just can't have access to all those things at home. And why would you want to buy all these like small little flavor additions that like, you're going to use like once in a lifetime?
Or things like, like you mentioned, glycerin is a great way to carry mm-hmm. texture when you don't really want to have glycerin sitting around at home.
It's not cool. But I think like I would say if you want to try and have a go at making things at home, like buy some of the great off the shelf products that you can.
Yeah.
I don't think on their own you're going to find a one stop
yeah.
Like silver bullet. It's not kind of like just that plus soda equals a great cocktail, but like two or three together, like you can start to come up with something that's got like a nice level of complexity.
I think going back to what I said before, I'm a massive fan of teas, actually. And one of my favorite places to get a huge range of teas from is this place in Sassafras called Tea Leaves. And you can find them on tealeaves.com.au, or you can go visit them in the shop up there, go for a nice little drive. And they're happy to let you, you know, smell the teas before you purchase them. They've got a crazy range. And I tell you what, it's better than, am I allowed to say this, T2? Because they're not using artificial flavors and aromas.
No, it's all...
it's natural.
Yeah.
And the potency of the floral aromas, the bouquet, everything. It's like, when you use that, I mean, if you can, use those sorts of ingredients in your drinks, and straight away can deliver another dimension of flavor and astringency if it's a black tea or a green tea, right?
People forget about the tannin that tea can provide. That gives you weight on the palate and can recreate that texture that you're kind of missing.
And goes great with food as well, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think stick to lighter, brighter bases. Don't try and replicate anything that's going to be super light. If you try to create a non-alcoholic old-fashioned,
well, that's
pretty
hard.
Pretty hard.
That's almost impossible.
Pretty hard. So like lighter, brighter, longer sort of styles of drink. Stick around that sort of area. Wine base is great. There's some great non-alcoholic versions of those things.
Even so, you've got like no alcohol sparkling wines that you can use instead of soda to create lengthening and...
and you're just going to get that inbuilt complexity from that ingredient.
So there are certain things we can do. So a couple of members of my family are now alcohol-free entirely after one fateful family trip. And so I've been thinking about this a lot more whenever, you know, my grandparents come down, because my grandmother's no longer drinking. My uncle and auntie are no longer drinking. So I've been thinking about this a lot more. So I'm probably going to start getting tasked with...
No,
it's the fate of anyone that works in hospitality. Oh, you're a bartender. You can make drinks for the family, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I've got a ice cube tray of 10 cubes.
10 cubes.
Yeah.
That's enough, isn't it?
That's more than enough for 15 people.
What do you mean? You can't make anything out of the liquor cabinet.
Yeah.
I've been collecting this for years.
Yeah, that dusty bottle of Advocat sitting in the back. This gentian's actually really good. I'd drink this.
Yeah.
Just as it is.
Splash of soda. Squeeze a lemon.
Yeah, delish. Fantastic.
It's much, it's just much lighter, but I think once you start sort of blending it with a few other ingredients,
Yeah, absolutely.
Talking about Bizza products, this is one of my new favorites.
Heaps normal. They've now got a lager as well.
Again, there's so many non-alcoholic beers on the market.
I find the no-alcoholic beer production really interesting, because no-alcohol beers have existed for quite a long time, surprisingly so. It started off in Germany and then went to America, especially during Prohibition. Yeah. And I found some marketing campaign where they were marketing Budweiser no-alcohol as a sports drink.
Sort of to drink at halftime.
Yeah, basically.
I like that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, it still feels a bit wrong to me. Like, I know that this is absolutely non-alcoholic, but I feel like I feel a bit naughty that it's beer. If it tastes like beer still, I can't have this in a sort of in my mind in a non-alcoholic setting.
I know, and that's the you know, it's effectively just a malt soft drink, right? That's effectively what it is.
A hopped malt soft drink.
Yeah, sure. But you know, walking down the street with it in the middle of the day seems wrong.
But totally fine, actually.
Yeah, it's entirely fine. That's why it's sold in Woolworths, but still, it's just. You know, it's such a foreign concept to us, which is so interesting. But there are so many great no-alcohol beers out there that are produced in different ways, right? So,
and I think, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't profess to know absolutely everything about the production.
I mean, it's really hard to learn about it as well, because I've talked to a few brewing friends and they go, well, everyone does it differently. We don't quite know.
Ooh, gatekeeping.
So I think, like, from what we've seen, there's like a couple of different big ways that either wineries or breweries do it. And one is like you can use, especially if you're a winery, you could use a vacuum still. Effectively, you want to, you know, heat the product to a point that the alcohol vapor boils off, but the other non-alcoholic liquids left behind. You can't do that at regular temperature, but if you put it in a vacuum, you can do it at like 30 degrees. Cool.
Yeah.
We're doing a little bit of research before we came along today, but like we found that actually a lovely Australian guy was also responsible for a big breakthrough in technology, using what they call a spinning cone still.
Mm-hmm.
Which effectively, it creates the same situation, but slightly different technology. It's used to capture essence, like flavor essences, those sorts of things, was why he really invented the technology. And then also it was used to lower alcohol, particularly in wine products, not in the way that we use it now. Like we're obviously sort of taking all of the alcohol out, but really it was from a tax perspective, like to say, not issue, but sort of like incentive in the US to have wine that's less than 14% ABV.
Yeah.
So, okay, it's hot year, you've produced a wine that's 16%. God damn it, what do I do? Well, you can stick it in the still and it'll lower it a couple of ABV.
It's kind of like a centrifuge slash still, right?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
And so, yeah, especially with Australian wines where we produce big wines, 16-17% sometimes.
Big Barossa guy.
Yeah.
It's all right, chuck it in one of these.
Yep.
Comes out at 14, down, lovely.
Send it over to the States, done. Yeah, there's also, what is it? There's a osmosis filtration kind of de-alcoholization kind of process, which I can't quite understand.
Neither.
Yeah, I started trying to look at it and it's way above my pay grade.
And that's why we leave it to the big guys to do
it. But I know that some breweries have also discovered, or it's been implemented in a lot of breweries around Australia, that they also found this yeast strain that can only ferment up to around 0.5%, but it ferments dry.
Really?
Yeah. So some breweries are starting to do that as well.
I remember like the first pubs that I used to work in the UK, we'd have like, again, like you said, it was non-alcoholic beer or low alcoholic beer. It had a percentage ABV on there. It was like 0.5%, but it was like Bitburger Drive, I think is the particular brand I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, again, there was like beer that was either literally just been watered down to the ABV, which tasted like it says, watered down beer. Or there was this other one which had been brewed to the ABV and great, tasted lovely actually.
Well, this is an example I've got here from one of our local heroes, Hop Nation, and they've got a great no alcoholic beer program at the moment. And this is, they call it alcohol-free sour beer, but it's a guava and pine sour. You guys should have one.
I look forward to it. Yes.
Yeah. But the they just do all these really cool seasonal ones as well. They did a no alcohol stout. They did, they've got their standard pale ale, which I absolutely love.
I'm so excited. This is great.
Have a taste of that. Yeah. How do you find, especially if you're, allergic to alcohol, how do you find these 0.5% or up to 0.5% beers?
Totally fine.
Yeah.
It's like having, I tell you what, I actually have more of a reaction. Sorry, I have more of a reaction drinking a well-made lemon lime bitters with a lot of Angostura bitters.
Yeah.
But no, I don't have that bad of a reaction to the 0.5% and lower products. And in fact, to be honest, it's really tasty. And like you said earlier,
this is delicious, by the way.
It's fantastic, as if it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh. I've been really impressed with what Hop Nation have done with their no alcohol program. We've got so many breweries around Australia now doing the same thing and just around the world. I mean, BrewDog in Scotland, they've got their Nanny State, which I think is a very, very funny name. Likewise with Bandwagon for Four Pillars, very well named. It's such an interesting space, especially no alcohol wine is exploding as well.
And the quality is really becoming much, much better. I think that like early examples you see is sort of like, I was seeing like old marketing campaigns for Welch's grain produce, which was initially sort of introduced to the US as a non-alcoholic wine for communion. Is funny, it's just like Concord grape juice, but like non-alcohol. Okay, cool. It's moved a long way. I think like now there's some real complexity, some real sort of like aroma character that you're getting. Like you're able to say, hey, that actually smells like a Riesling.
You've got simple brands out there like was it Plus Minus as well?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
That's just readily available everywhere, and they're actually not that bad at all.
Would you consider opening a non-alcoholic space, a bar?
I think there's absolutely the space for it. I don't think there is the market for it quite yet. I think it's on the way.
I think you also won't be capturing the same audiences, obviously.
No.
But it does give people a reason to go out if they're experiencing an offer that they can't you know, do it where they can't do it themselves at home. Speaking of which, there is a little
let's try your cocktail that you made.
But this one was not made with. We used the gentian, the Palomo gentian in it. And we had to, and we also used a non-alcoholic Shiraz. Who was the, I can't remember the brand that we used.
McWilliams, I think.
McGuigan.
Yes, no, you're right.
Yeah. And then we had to make our own non-alcoholic tequila as well, because that was.
So you made your own non-alcoholic.
Non-alcoholic tequila.
Yeah.
Mimicking the taste of agave spirit. That was hard. I just used a bit of dried fruit, like pineapples, some mixed herbs, like sage and thyme, and then to add a bit of heat to mimic that sensation of spirit, added a bit of jalapeno as well.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. Yeah.
But this mocktail was meant to mimic another cocktail that had tequila in it, Davidson Plum, and it was meant to be served as a highball. So it is meant to be quite refreshing, a touch tart. Bit floral.
Process to make a no alcohol tequila alternative would be.
That was really the breakthrough, actually, for this particularly. Like the other ingredients on their own were, you know, fine. They tasted nice, but adding that kind of real herbaceous character, I don't think we could ever sort of pretend that it really tastes like tequila.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But it's just working with like what you imagine those like flavor profiles to be.
Exactly.
And you give those tasting notes, you taste tequila, you can say, oh, yeah, it's got. Well, that roasted pineapple. Well, okay. Well, let's imagine that we'll put that flavor actually in there then.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was really the sort of Priscilla's invention and breakthrough for like making this drink,
making
like,
this
giving
again.
It like amazing. A lot of work actually. It's good.
Because you're saying you made it for an event, right?
Oh yes. So. Lexus last year were one of the major sponsors for the Spring Racing Carnival.
Mm-hmm.
They had their own little tent where, since it was a daytime event, and it was, 10 hours of drinking?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were tasked with half a menu to be alcoholic as well as the other half being non-alcoholic. That was quite a challenge, I think. And actually, talking about challenges... I don't know if you've seen this, but Diageo World Class, for the first round, the entry round, they're including seed lip as an ingredient.
Yeah,
now.
I did see this.
I'm so excited. Yeah. I can't wait to see what everyone comes up with.
Yeah, I wonder how many people will actually take that
that
challenge upon themselves, you know? I'm actually really I'm not a cocktail competition bartender at all. I tend to avoid them at all cost anyway.
That's fine.
that's just not my bag. So but I am really excited that for the first year in a long while, they've given people not just a challenge and going, this is your ingredient, going, you can use out of these, whatever you want.
Yeah.
So interesting.
Yeah. Mm. Going back to the way it used to be, I guess.
Yeah.
Great way to stand out as well, though, I think. Like, embrace that challenge. Be good.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's people out there, I mean, like yourselves, who are taking that challenge upon themselves to do no alcohol cocktails and do them well. So it's good to see that they're recognizing that.
Oof. I don't know.
We'll see. Now, we've talked about all these great brands already that have, I guess, shaped this space. Are there any others that we might have left out? Or?
Oh, man. I mean, we're massive fans of things like Crodino or mm-hmm. Sambitter, which are made by San Pellegrino.
Yeah, yeah.
Paul makes a lovely guava margarita. And
that's true, yes. The Everly Bottling Co. Yeah. I have to sort of give a little plug.
Yeah,
We do 3 non-alcoholic cocktails at the moment, guava margarita, Bellini, like a traditional peach, and Venetian spritz. So I think you can kind of like traditional Venetian Aperol type spritz, but non-alc.
Yeah, yeah.
And man, they've like those three drinks have been amazing for us. Biggest like movers that we have in the business now.
Well, that's
crazy,
good to see.
Yeah.
That the no alcohols are.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit of a kind of unfair comparison. It's not exactly oranges for oranges.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're selling non-alc, we can sell to a lot more avenues than just licensed venues. So it opens up a few other opportunities, but the popularity is amazing. And like the space for people to get excited about an adult soft drink effectively is really there.
Yeah, and it's not just pumped full of sugar. It is, more challenge, I guess, complex and interesting than, say, just...
Yeah, we wanted to have something that was sat alongside the sparkling range that we already have. So you know, an Americano, a French 75, Palomita, which is kind of a sparkling wine version of a Paloma, and have drinks that would be, like you say, adult, complex, interesting, not leave you feeling sort of like sickly or... But you want to feel like refreshed and like feel as though you're sort of like out with your friends, and I've still got a drink that's really lovely and beautiful, and I can celebrate and not worry about the fact I'm not drinking.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're not going to worry about tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's another big thing. You know, people want that, that's part of that wellness movement at the moment. Yeah. You know, people are wanting to be healthier. People are wanting to, you know, not feel sick the next day, or, you know, just sluggish or.
Sorry, I just can't stop thinking about your 30th.
I know. Which was, a big weekend for me.
You only live once.
I know. And you only turn 30 once.
Exactly. It should be big. It's good.
Well, I guess on that note, I think we've covered everything that I really wanted to, but I do have four final questions for you. Oof. And these are secret questions that I hope you haven't heard.
Uh-oh.
I also recognize that these are surrounding alcohol, so let's acknowledge that very quickly.
It's okay, you know.
We are bartenders at heart.
Exactly. All right, so first one, what is your shot of choice?
I normally go towards agave or rye whiskey.
Yeah.
I'll have a baby shot of Armagnac.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. What is your guilty pleasure drink?
Oh, I know this one.
Well, I love anything mint chocolate, so grasshopper for me.
I love a grasshopper. Yeah.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
I thought you would have said Golden Cadillac.
Well, that's also great. Yeah, you can do that as well. Anything creamy, actually.
Yeah.
So cute.
Toblerone.
Mine's a bit embarrassing because I actually like...
That makes it a guilty pleasure drink, right?
Yeah, true. Mm. Big fan of peated whiskey,
mm-hmm.
but with Coca-Cola.
Oh, love that. Yeah, Smoky Cokie.
Smoky Cokie, yeah, that's right. Thank you.
Yeah. I will stand by the Smoky Cokie till the day I die.
Coming to a menu year, you see. I love that. That name is amazing.
I actually had a Smoky Cherry Cokie on my menu.
Oh, my
Cherry Cokie?
Yeah, so it was, I made a lacto-fermented cherry liqueur. And that was wild. How do you like your martini, shaken or stirred?
Straight out of the freezer.
Yeah.
Straight out of the freezer. Yeah.
Cold as you can, please.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess you could make an argument for that being stirred.
Just pour.
Yeah.
Poured. We stirred it in the big vessel beforehand.
Yeah. All right, stirred, yeah.
Yeah. All right, final one. What are your thoughts on red wine and Coca-Cola?
Yum.
Yeah.
I'm all for it.
Yeah. Vula is...
We actually...
Absolutely abhorrent.
Have you
had one?
No. We are going to make her have one on recording.
Well,
at some
I think
point
you should. Yes. We listened to, I'm going to say last week's, but it's maybe not last week's podcast, where you mentioned it previously. Yeah. And we're like, we should bring some red wine and Coke.
I forgot. Oh, no.
I entirely forgot I was meant to do it today. But I did forget.
No, it's great.
It's pretty good. Yeah. No. Dash of bitters.
Oh.
It'll feel like Christmas.
It really shouldn't work, but it's amazing.
Yeah.
And I would even add sherry and lemonade. That's great as well. Mm. Yeah,
so, sherry and lemonade.
So good.
Brandy and lemonade's great.
Yeah, brandy and tonic.
Brandy and tonic,
yeah.
Just mixed drinks. Well, on that note, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
It's been amazing.
This has actually been a lot of fun. And now I can go drive a car if I need to.
How long have you been waiting to say that?
Yeah, a long time, actually. Well, thank you so much, guys.
Thank you, Lockie.
Cheers.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for joining me on another episode of Spirited Discussions. I hope you had as much fun as I have and have been able to take away something you didn't know. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with your friends. And please join me next time on Spirited Discussions.